Welcome at Euromills Podcast. We would like to continue today talking about the strategic strategic compass. Our guest today is Roger Hoesen. Roger is a retired colonel of the Belgian Armed Forces. He held various positions in as well operational, personnel, and political military domains, both nationally and internationally. Since his retirement, Roger is, among other things, strategic consultant at Euromills Belgian Member Association, ACMP, CGPM, and it's in this quality that we invited Roger today for this podcast. Roger, welcome at Euromill.
Thank you.
I would like to kick off with the first question, like we did with all our other guests, and that is, what is for you the strategic compass in a few lines?
Thank you, Manu, for having me. The strategic compass is for me, in the first place, a case for optimism. With the development of the rapid deployment capacity, it will provide the most promising and credible tool for crisis management and prompt military reaction since the beginning of the creation of the European Union.
Well, of course, as Euromill, we are quite interested in how things will also go for personnel. And one of the elements in the strategic compass is the rapid deployment capacity. We can compare it, of course, with the EU battle groups, but this rapid deployment capacity says that it will be constituted up to 5,000 troops for rescue, evacuation, stabilization operations. And in order to increase interoperability and readiness, these forces will train and exercise together. Now, what we wonder is, do we see them more as national troops or anyway as a kind of European Union soldiers?
I personally think that the status of these service members of this rapid deployment capacity will remain national, at least in the short term. Because the various hurdles to be taken in a lot of different fields are still too high for the time being. And they are going to require a lot of preparatory coordination and political work. Among other things, I'm thinking of the following bottlenecks. First of all, who will assume insurance and compensation, for instance, in the event of serious injury or death during operational deployments? Secondly, which administrative status will apply, for example, with respect to discipline or leave? Thirdly, what will be the financial status of the service members? And can we accept substantial differences in the allowances and remuneration between those service members? Or finally, what will be the prerogatives of the trade unions represented in that unit. In other words, there's a lot of harmonization to be done, and it will require a lot of legal and judicial work, but above all, a lot of political will. All the more so since issues of sovereignty will pop up, such as, will the troops of this EU force be under the command of an EU authority? And how far will this authority extend? And what kind of constraints will apply for example, regarding the use of force? Who will decide on the rules of engagement? Will the national governments and parliaments no longer have a say in this? So there are a lot of topics to be resolved. Hence, I think that in terms of the status of service members of that unit, the national rules will continue to apply for quite some time.
Yeah, and I think we should come back later on once again on military personnel related to this strategic compass. But let's first go to a few of the recent tools that we got in this whole security and defense discussion on the European level. We have the European Defense Fund, which is still quite new. We have PESCO, where we already have now several dozens of projects going on. Now, in the strategic compass, as well EDF and PESCO should fill in some of the strategic gaps and enhance capabilities. How do you see that this will work?
I personally think that with regard to the existing gaps and shortcomings within the EU military capabilities, the contribution of the European Defence Fund and PESCO within the framework of Strategic Compass can move a lot of things in the right direction on the short term. I'm thinking, first of all, of capabilities to increase, for instance, the resilience of our EU countries. For instance, dual systems for cyber operations, capabilities to protect us from hybrid threats, and the improper use of drones, capacities to secure our critical infrastructure for border management, or to increase medical support to the civilian chain. In addition, PESCO and the European Defence Fund will of course contribute to accelerating the joint development and commissioning of other systems for expeditionary use, such as strategic intelligence capacities, strategic transport systems, tools for the protection of our shipping lanes, robotic systems for surveillance and ground operations, and space assets for global positioning, observation, and secure satellite communications.
Now, quite often, one of the points of criticism that we and other ones have, at least those that are dealing with military personnel, is that we talk a lot about our structures, about capabilities, but really on men and women, this is never the or not enough the point of interest. Do you see, and if yes, how that military personnel could be influenced by these developments that we have now?
Yeah, I see, as a matter of fact, I see some positive effects on the short term, things that can really have an impact on our service members. They will, for instance, create new career opportunities in the short and medium term. They will enable new training and education tracks and possibilities, as well as the opportunity for new multinational training, which will also have a real added value. And those multinational units will also offer chances to be employed in other places and in a new environment. So I see really on the short term, very positive things.
Now, an issue that you already touched upon before, when we were talking about military personnel and how things could go in a more synchronized way in the future, there are anyway a few quite new topics in the Strategic Compass. For example, the cost of common military exercises will be covered, at least for a part, by the European Union, and this to increase interoperability. While, for example, the European deployment capacity will be financed also by the European Peace Facility. Now, these kind of developments, aren't also these ones opportunities for better synchronization between the European Union's armed forces, but also in the field of working and social conditions?
Yes, I think so. The Strategic Compass will in my opinion, generate additional opportunities for a better synchronization between the EU military regarding working and social rights. After all, working together also means speaking together and comparing each other's situation and hence also each other's status. And automatically, service members will consider issues such as the level of safety and protection at work, political rights, the right to strike, freedom of expression, their working time, days of leave, and even the prerogatives or working environment of their military unions. And if the divergences between service members from different countries belonging to the same rapid deployment brigade, we have to train together, deploy together, and to endure the same things. If those divergences are too great, then there will be certainly a both bottom-up and top-down pressure to gradually move towards a certain level of harmonization in those fields. And it's difficult to estimate now how far this harmonization will go and how long it will take. But in my opinion, it's almost certain that it will get there someday. On the other hand, I think that for matters such as remuneration, compensation policy, health and disability insurances, things like that, the differences between the different European countries in terms of living standards and national regulations are still too great, and that we will not see much harmonization in these areas on the short term.
I think we all agree with that point. And what we see is, of course, that already many years ago, for example, the European Parliament agreed on what they then called a SAFE project, which meant at that time Synchronized Armed Forces Europe. I think that with Strategic Compass, as we have now, we are getting much closer than ever with these kind of synchronization. The thing will, of course, be that we all need to talk a very clear language in which direction that we go, and talk about the same and have the same objectives for the whole European community. And this brings us to almost the end of today's podcast. But I would like to submit one more question to you, and that is, in your view and in your world and in your perception, what would be or should be the outcome of the Strategic Compass? And when would you be satisfied?
Regarding its long-term outcome, I strongly believe that the Strategic Compass offers the opportunity to close the gap between, on the one hand, too much rhetoric, and on the other hand, too little action. Two characteristics that have pushed the European securities and defense efforts to a level that was not sufficient high enough in the past. So I really believe that we all should welcome this initiative very strongly. And in my opinion, it will be a real important tool to bring the European defense and security policy on a much higher level than before.
Thank you so much. And with this last answer, I think you joined all the other speakers that we already had before on Euromill's podcast. Until now, we did not talk with someone who was not satisfied that the Strategic Compass was finally on the table. But the main thing, what we heard as well from our speakers on the podcast, but also in panel discussions and in talks with military specialists, as you are one of them, is that the success of the Strategic Compass will be composed by three words. And the three words are implementation, implementation, and implementation. And we can add political will, because implementation and lack of political will never be successful. And it's now or never, I think, for the European Union, if we want to have a very reliable future of European security and defense.
And Roger, I fully concur with you. Yeah.
Roger, thank you very much for your contribution.
It was
thank
my
you
pleasure.
For your support and for the support from your organization, ACMP-CGPM, at Euromill. And ladies and gentlemen, we will be back soon with more news on our podcast. Goodbye and thanks so much.